For more information on ancient dragon Zengate and Taigen's teachings, please visit our website at www.ancientdragon.org. Our teachings are offered to the community through the generosity of our supporters. To make a donation online, please click on the link for Just Give on our website.
For the opportunity to give this talk. As you can see, I have a lot here that I could possibly knock over. So that'll be kind of interesting to see if that happens or not. What I wanted to talk about today as the artist, as Bodhisattva. First, to define Bodhisattva. Bodhisattva is a term used for an enlightened being who has developed a great sense of compassion. And because of that great sense of compassion that's been developed in the individual, they decide to remain in realms that have living sentient beings in them to help them also achieve enlightenment. According to the Buddha, we're all bodhisattvas, and we just don't maybe realize it right now, but we are. An artist is, there's a lot of different terms for an artist, so I want to get more specific so the talk doesn't go all over the place. I'm using the term a person who produces work in any of the arts that are subject to an aesthetic criteria. And because I threw out this wonderful word, aesthetic, I have to also use a definition for that as well so that the talk is a little more specific. And I'm using aesthetic as relating to, involving, or concerned with pure emotion and sensation as opposed to pure intellectuality. So I want to talk about bodhisattva beings that are artists and use mediums that convey emotion, that convey sensation, but don't necessarily over-intellectualize something as a way to help us achieve enlightenment. Or at least a doorway to get a sense of what that might be. Now, there are many different arts in our world, which is one reason I wanted to talk about this, is because performing arts, lyrical arts, visual arts, all that whole sphere of experience is one of my favorite in this life. But I need to get more specific again, so I'd like to speak about music. And I want to talk about lyrical music, so meaning music that also has lyrics as part of its conveyance. So getting back to bodhisattva qualities, generally it's believed a bodhisattva has developed three ideals that helps them in their bodhisattva work. One is the understanding of the cessation of suffering. The next one is, again, great compassion, the ability to be compassionate to all living beings. And third is skillful means. So we just came off a spring practice period as well in the Sangha where we did a little more intense study. And we studied a sutra that really talked about the bodhisattva ideal and also emphasized skillful means in the bodhisattva ideal. And we'll talk about that in more detail a little bit down the road. But I wanted to look first at the cessation of suffering. I am like many people that I was drawn to Buddhist practice because I wanted my own suffering to stop. And I didn't really know how to do that. And by the time I was exposed to the ideas or philosophy of Buddhism, I was in my early 20s. And I kind of had some hit or miss experiences with it through my teen years that like hit me on the head, and then I completely forgot about it right after that. Musical participation on any level, whether you're a listener or a participant, whether you're creating music or responding to it, usually affords a person a cessation of suffering right out of the gate. But I want to talk about my life pre-Buddhist exposure, because this is where music plays the most important role for me. As I was growing up, I, like many people, feel that my childhood was very tumultuous. I know I'm not the only one who feels that way. Whether that's true or not, that's how I felt at the time. And music played a big part in giving me some peace and enjoyment through what I felt was a very tumultuous time. It's very much credited to my parents. They were ballroom dancers, and they came of age at the tail end of the big band era. So as I was growing up, a few things were always being played in my house, one of them being big band music, which is wonderful if you haven't listened to any of it. It's just amazing, the wall of sound that a big band creates. My parents were also really into Broadway plays. So we ran the gamut of The King and I and Fiddler on the Roof and The Sound of Music. And as a child, these songs were wonderful because they also told stories. And then also my mom was really big on the crooners, the Jerry Vales and the Andy Williams, which now are pretty much forgotten. But they were like Tony Bennett. They just weren't that as popular as Tony Bennett. So I had all of that surrounding me as I was growing up. And then at a very young age, believe it or not, when you were a girl back in the 60s, for physical activity, you had one of three options available to you. You either danced, you got into figure skating, or you did gymnastics, because there was still a little bit of gender identity on what you were supposed to do and not do as a female. So my mother, being a ballroom dancer, put me into dance. And dance is where I found my first sense of stillness within activity. I was always one that always liked to move, and sitting on a cushion has always been a little more difficult for me. But dancing and moving to music was where I found a sense of peace and equanimity, regardless of what was going on in my life. I grew up in an apartment like most city kids, and it wouldn't even matter what was going on in the apartment. I would go into one of the other rooms, put on some music, and I would just dance. Even if it was 3 foot by 3 foot by 3 foot area. And it was wonderful. It was just wonderful. And in some ways, we're missing out on some of these things. But, you know, that's okay. But for me, that's where I first became aware of an expansiveness and a different texture to life. So I'm always very grateful to that. In any musical participation, though, like dance, I had to at some point, I danced from the age of 4 to 16. At some point, you have to decide if you're going to be a professional or not. I decided not to, again, because of fear and anxiety and again, a gaining attitude starts getting into it, right? Well, if I need a career, I need to make money, you know, certain things need to happen. And because of the way I was as a person and the type of security I felt I needed, I abandoned the idea of being a professional dancer. And then, of course, what tends to happen as you move out into the world, as you're growing up, you get pulled in different directions. So the dancing kind of got put on the side. But at that time, I also became a much more avid listener of music. So as I moved out into the world, music became a reflection of what I was seeing in the world and an influence on how I related to it. I was always a very emotional person, and I for anyone who knows me a little better, I still am very emotional. And it allowed me to experience the emotions of any given experience without any social repercussions. Sometimes, you know, times are a little different now. But when I was growing up, and especially in the environment I was in, it really wasn't acceptable to be very emotional all the time. You know, you're supposed to have a stiff upper lip, buck it up. You know, you really only show deep emotions to your family members. And there was a lot of reasons for that, which is another Dharma talk in itself. So it was very hard for me to express very deep emotions. But I found when I was listening to music and it moved me, in some way it was acceptable in that venue or that milieu to experience emotions in a strong manner. And then it also gave me what modern philosophy or psychology calls a feeling of flow. Flow being the mental state in which a person performing an activity is fully immersed with an energized, focused, full involvement, and complete enjoyment in the process. So again, as a child, whether I was dancing and participating in music in this fashion, or as I became a teen or a young adult, whether if I was listening, I also experienced that sense of flow. And again, this is something that at times we can experience in our zazen. Our zazen's always different and it's always changing, but there are moments that we may experience this sensation. I used to say about music when I was younger that it was the only thing in our human life that gives you enjoyment and doesn't ask for any payback. And in my mindset at the time, you know, if you gain a material thing, it breaks or you lose it, and you know, then you're sad about that. If you like to party, you get a hangover the next day. If you like to eat a lot of food, you'll get fat if you don't watch what you're doing. If you fall in love, you'll get your heart broken. If you find a great job, you might end up losing it someday. So now, mind you, I wasn't practicing Buddhism at the time, so this is my perspective of life. But music was the only thing at that time that I felt was pure enjoyment, and it didn't ask for anything back from me. As I continued to practice Buddhism, I realized it's because music at that time in my life was the only thing I did not have a gaining attitude about. So I was experiencing some of the aspects of Buddhist practice without even being a Buddhist. Shunryu Suzuki, who is the founder of this lineage in the United States, our Soto Zen lineage that we're part of, that we practice within, once said about Zazen that it is a perfect expression of Buddha nature. It is not a means of obtaining some state of mind. And I actually feel that way about music. So now I'm moving into more the artist, the person who is really an artist in music. And I want to put a disclaimer in right now. I'm not talking about pop culture phenomenons, which there are many of. But someone who maybe had a career over years, you could actually see the differences and the ups and downs in that career, and you could also see the maturity of how they're expressing their art in the world. The artist is Bodhisattva, has great compassion. Even in the beginning, if someone gets attracted to becoming a performer or becoming a musician, generally they want to entertain, influence, provoke, or please. And again, we all know as we're growing up, our ego is the driving force into a lot of the things we do, because this is the natural way human beings grow into an individual. But usually, from the desire to please, provoke, express, entertain, or influence, that vision widens by nature of the scope of what you're trying to do. And as an artist, you're forced to look at and draw from the world around you. And you're constantly forced to look at the world with a more exacting lens and looking at all the nuances and subtleties of our world with a more focused attention. So in many ways, the artist becomes a student of the human condition, both internal and external, without ever turning away. So the similarity for us is the artist in their everyday life chooses to face the wall. They also become, because of this, great listeners, so they can understand the experience of the people around them. And through that great ability to listen, they become almost like an antenna in which they take in and synthesize and absorb that information. And then they put it back out to us, and they speak to the universality of specific experiences. In some ways, the great artists, and again, I want to say, even if you're not into lyrical music, think about anybody through my talk who you feel is a great artist, whether it's an actor, a writer, a film director, because it applies across the board. The great artists tell us you are not alone in your uniqueness. You are all the same in your individuality. See? Emotional. They tell us form is emptiness. Emptiness is form. For those of you new to Buddhism, this is like our drumbeat. We say this a lot. Form is emptiness. Emptiness is form. We sit with this a lot. We think about it a lot. We try to experience this in the moments of our life. Great artists allow people to become aware of the disenfranchised, different races and cultures, the downtrodden, different ways of doing things, unorthodox ways of living, or they look very closely at orthodox ways of living. By just presenting these different facets of our human condition, they put in front of the listener, the viewer, the reader, they put in front of them these concepts in a non-threatening way to be explored in a visceral and emotional level. So again, they try through their own flow to give us a sense of flow, the mental state in which a person is performing an activity and is fully immersed with an energized focus, full involvement, and enjoyment in the process. Shunryu Suzuki tells us our original mind, that mind that is there before we are even the individual that we are today, our original mind includes everything within itself. It is empty and a ready mind. If your mind is empty, it is always ready for anything. It is open to everything. And of course, the great artist is most versed in skillful means. Whether an internal, emotional, relational piece an artist might be creating or a commentary on a larger issue, the listener is allowed to look at a subject without feeling blamed or called out. They allow us to examine our own experience without getting defensive or apologetic. They allow people to come to their own conclusions. They don't tell them the right answer. But they have faith that each individual, because we are each connected to the universal, will see the broader, expansive way. Good art is abstract enough that people could fill in the blanks on their own. It's exact enough that the feeling resonates deeply with everyone. Now, mind you, there's very few people who are really great artists. That's why I'm saying it's not just pop culture phenomenons. If they're really good in whatever area of the arts they started out in, usually they could coordinate, for example, the music with visuals, design, and physical movement. They're usually consistent in their craft, and they have patience through their long career because they know as an artist they can be a catalyst for deep and lasting social change. And being an artist as a bodhisattva, they use and help us realize flow, the mental state in which a person performs an activity and is fully immersed with an energized focus, full involvement, and enjoyment in the process. Shunryu Suzuki said, "The important thing in our understanding is to have a smooth, free-thinking way of observation. We have to think and observe things without stagnation. We should accept things as they are without difficulty." And, you know, that last sentence really stuck with me a lot because this, now I'm sidetracking a little bit, but I'm going to go back. We all know this has been a very difficult week for the United States on both levels, for our citizens getting violently apprehended and killed, and by the people who protect us getting gunned down in the street. And I didn't want to come in here and beat everybody's head over with a hammer about it, because we've all been beaten up enough all week long, regardless of what your opinion is about everything that's going on. And what we realize is, you know, we are responding to these things that happen. We can't say we're not, but we're not finding the right solutions. Somehow we're not doing the right thing. And the friction will help us understand the right way to go, but we're not finding it. And that's why it's continually escalating. And I'm going back to the artists because sometimes they're able to show us things without creating that conflict. They create the conflict within the individual, but they don't necessarily create the conflict with each individual, duking it out with each other. And again, I'm not saying that it's easy to do. It's amazing that they could do it. And that's why I see them as bodhisattvas. So, I don't know why this is so emotional for me. Where is this coming from? Okay. But see, this is because Taigen's a good teacher, and this is really just being in the present moment. And we all want to live that way, don't we? You know. Also, this is the 6-month anniversary of David Bowie's death. You knew it, right? And he had a profound influence on my life. And I knew it while I was living it. So I don't want to tell you that I didn't realize it until he died. Because I could say through my Buddhist practice, I was very aware of the influence he had. And actually, when he hit 60, I started worrying about him dying. And I thought, when is it going to be that day I'm going to get that email? And I hope it's not today. And every birthday that would come around for him, I was just happy he was still around, even if he wasn't performing, because he took a little hiatus. But anyway, it's just my way of honoring him. And I wanted, okay, so I wanted to present something, because David Bowie at his best has a very long career, but he really is at his best when, thank you, I never carry this and I always should because I don't, it's like I don't know myself. He was at his best when he was abstract and simple and to the point. And I wanted to present some of the lyrics, but also in honor of another great bodhisattva within our lineage named Reb Anderson, who is Taigen's teacher. and has taught many of us in this room that have practiced well, and thankfully is still among us, gratefully. I'm going to try and sing this. Now, mind you, David Bowie is actually more difficult to sing than you think. So I'm probably going to be a little flat and off key at some point. But the name of this song is Sound and Vision, and it's really short. And I have to. Don't you wonder sometimes about sound and vision? Blue, blue, electric blue, that's the color of my room where I will live. Pale blinds drawn all day, wondering what to say. Blue, blue, I will sit right down, waiting for the gift of sound and vision. I will sing, waiting for the gift of sound and vision. Drifting into my solitude, over my head, don't you wonder sometime about sound and vision? If you have any comments or any stories about an artist that has greatly influenced you in your life, please share it with us, because we could really use it this week as well.
It was the person I was thinking about while the talk was even done for me. He was the first artist that my dad raised me on the Beatles. He's a huge Beatles fan. My dad was into it, that's what I was into. I heard him do a performance, I stumbled across it when I was pretty young, like 13, doing an acoustic performance of Pocahontas, and that was like the first, like, oh man. And it was something like totally where I had found it. It was something that was, that there was no prior context for me. It was just hit me in the face, and so he became his music became very core and central to me for teenage years. And I had stopped listening to him for a long time because he became like, as I went to college and high school, I wanted to. Develop into different things and listen to different stuff. But recently I started listening to him again. And it was an interesting feeling of like returning to an original self or like meeting a different version of myself again when I would hear his music. And one thing that I thought about, I consider him a great artist in that way, where he changes so much and so willingly, open, Just
yeah.
Makes records that have nothing to do with each other. In an interview, the interviewer asked him, how does, because he's still so creative, he makes a record like every year, and he's 70 now. And the interviewer asked him where he gets this from, and he said, I just respect the source. Which I love that. He just said, whenever it's time to make a record, I don't force it, it's just whenever it just happens, and I respect that it's happening, and I just do it. He doesn't even worry about if it's good or not. He doesn't care. It's just whatever the music that has to be made, he makes it. And so I really respect that. I love his music a lot. It's the way he did it.
No gaining attitude.
Yeah. It's just whatever has to come out, it does.
And they'll say, too, they know that when they put it out there, they got to let it go. Whatever the reaction is to it, and however someone interprets it, a good artist generally won't tell you what they were thinking about. They let you interpret it on your own because they know once they put it out there, through your own lens, it'll affect you through your own experience. That was one thing about videos. Some of you are too young, some of you are not. When videos first came out, one of the biggest arguments against it was that the musician was then giving the listener a visual storyline for the song, where think about it, before that, before you had the visual and you just had the lyrics, it's just like reading a book as opposed to seeing a movie. Your mind will take you to a story that's relevant for you, with the lyrics and music being a jumping off point for that story. So, thank you. Aisha.
Thank you, Paula. That was a really wonderful talk, and I don't want to influence anything that you already said, but or contradict or even elaborate on. But one thing that you just said just now about needing to put something out there and then let it go really resonated for me, because my sort of artist like that is Todd Rundgren, who
also, I love Todd.
I love David Bowie too. But really, like, my person that I listened to throughout, you know, all time was Todd Rundgren. And recently, like within the last year or two, I went to see him. He was playing at, I think, the Vic. And I was so excited. I was like, this is so great. Yeah, because we had actually seen him play with the Rockford Symphony Orchestra a couple years before that, and he did all the great old hits, and we're like, oh, this is awesome.
Yeah.
We get there, and we're so excited to see this Todd Rundgren concert. We got great seats. And he comes out, and he has an entirely different show. He has an entirely new show from a new album. Every song is on climate change. And I'm like, okay. And then, you know, at the very end, what it's called when they get up after everybody's applauded.
Ovation.
Yeah, right. When they come back.
Encore.
Played like two hit songs, and we were like so excited, but still, those were the only songs that we recognized the whole time. And, you know, it really took me a while to digest how much I was holding on to these past albums, and at the same time realizing that what was happening in the room is exactly what has happened with every iteration. It's just that I remember all these and they're in my, you know, in my head, but
yep.
Each album was a new album with a new direction, and, you know, and he's still doing it. And so I was thinking about how, you know, with beginner's mind, you know, when you're an artist early in your career, you can kind of put stuff out there and you're not so attached to it. But it was making me realize how much I was so attached to, you know, these other songs. And I'm like, can I let go of this enough to, like, make room for some new things? So, it's hard. I really respect any artist who, when the pull is so great to play, you know, all your greatest hits and to say, okay, great.
Yep.
You know, never be done.
And not to put anyone down who does that.
Yeah, no.
And again, a lot of artists, I mean, they'll tell you who they think is a great artist, you know. I mean, yeah. it's not everybody. But for those of you who don't know Todd Rundgren, I think he's like, how old is he now, 65, 16? And he was really good at writing little pop ditties, you know, back in the 70s. He wrote, "Hello, it's me, I thought about us for a long..." Okay, that was his biggest hit. But he stopped doing that because he said it was too easy.
Yeah.
Now, you remember he had that Something Anything, that double album set that was full of pop ditties like that, and he totally changed directions.
Yeah.
But, you know, it's like...
He did all these weird artsy things.
Right. With Utopia and all that stuff.
The same title of the same song with completely different songs and different albums.
And then he also was a forerunner of visuals with music as well, which people don't realize. But, so that's what I mean. As a great artist, he's older. He's old. He'll tell you, okay? He's not pretending to be a young man. But he's forcing his fan base to continue to change with him, because, you know, we show up, we want to hear the hits, and he's like, no, I am not playing the hits. I'll play them later for you. I know you want some of the hits, but you're going to listen to what else is going on. You know, so thank you, Todd.
Thank you, Paula.
Thank you, Kathy.
I love that talk. The word transcendent comes to mind. The emotional part I get, because, you know, especially in my early 20s, you know, I was fortunate. There was all kinds of wonderful music, right, it was the early 70s. But that occasionally you hear something, like for me, Cécile Strauss and Cat Stevens especially, mm-hmm. sometimes the songs they would sing, the lyrics would be like so, oh my God, like how do you know? You know, it's like, that touches me so deeply. But it's not just the lyrics, it's the music. It's the combination of the music and the voice. And so I think the ability to get outside yourself or to maybe connect with someone who's voicing something that you really feel strongly that you didn't realize. To feel felt, to feel like somebody else experiences the same thing, you know, is also, it can be such an incredible relief for a sense of transcendence or kind of being able to understand what you're doing.
Thank you, Kathy. Dave? Oh, sorry. Hi, Andy.
Thank you for your talk. I really like your perspective of thinking about the artist as a bodhisattva, and the person that came to mind for me was Alan Lomax. Was not a performer himself, but kind of like an archivist and a field recorder, went around the country starting in the early turn of the century, and became a lot more active in the 50s, collecting field recordings of different kind of what we term folkways, like people's music that they would make in their homes or in religious congregations, or like prison work songs of people who generally had no means to kind of record it themselves. And kind of on the surface, it seems like, you know, kind of collecting and stockpiling sounds and things seems kind of like a gaining idea. But if you listen to his or read interviews with him, he was very much driven by like wanting to counteract the kind of the mass-produced culture and music and everything pushed on us as a product, and preserve these kind of folkways that were getting drowned out by that, and you know, always had a kind of mind for social justice, and in a mind for like preserving, you know, things that may be lost for future generations. But I encourage anyone to check it out. Check out this recording. So thank you for your talk.
Alan Lomax.
Alan Lomax. Lomax.
A lot of great blues artists known to us because of.
Right. Yeah.
For me, also, especially the idea of, you know, I can talk about this for hours, but like, about his music. But for me, what really touched me was growing up as a kid in the suburbs. And white suburbs was like when Prince first became popular. He is kind of freaky elements, but like, what I found most interesting, how he presented himself, was like. He creates these bands that are like, they would reflect society. We got men and women in it, which was not the case, you know,
right.
Standard. Different shades of skin color in this band. Anyway, to me, that was just like, that blew my mind in the sense of like, here was someone cutting through the typical presentation of how pop and music is presented, and just really bringing a backward reflection. A real reflection of the world around it, and using that to kind of express his music. To me, I was like, wow, that's really cool. And so, I mean, as an artist, like, he operated on so many different levels, and that was just one that really stuck out for me.
Right. And having a female on guitar was very unusual. Very unusual.
Thank you.
Thank you.
When I think about music, I think of how evocative it is. And what really got me when we were talking, it's funny because I've been playing it in my mind this week with the old, having been on marches during the 60s, and all we are saying is give peace a chance. And just hearing that over and over in my mind, and it just brings up so much more emotion for me, having, you know, been in Washington in the 60s. And seeing literally hundreds of thousands of people singing that, and it just what that does. And I think of artist Wu Bao, and I think maybe one of the most incredible songs is to see where he came from, and then what he actually did was Imagine. He came, you know, John Lennon came from that whole pop culture.
Right.
To see Bao came to this person.
Absolutely. Yeah.
It's just, and then there are other people in the pop culture who I think are so important that resonate, like Billy Joel and the song Midnight Saigon. It's just, so for me as somebody who lived in the Vietnam era, just I just can't listen to that song without getting chills because it was so much part of art. So what's interesting is how, or what's important is just how much emotion that the music brings to us. And I think that's the part of it, is like getting us back to the source, so to speak. And so I really appreciate your talk, which you just brought up so much emotion in myself. So thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you, David. And thank you, Paula, very much.
Aren't you going to say anything about Bob Dylan?
Well, I talk about Bob Dylan all the time, so I didn't have to mention his name.
Tigan's a big Bob Dylan fan.
You know, but what your talk brings up, and I appreciate, you know, David Bowie was fantastic. But there's so many others, and that's part of what's, you know, to talk about the artist as Bodhisattva, there's really, Leonard Cohen, Elvis Costello, there's so many great lyrical artists who enrich our lives. And yeah, I think it is relevant to talk about those people in the context of Bodhisattva expression and practice, and all the people who've been mentioned, and enriching, enlightening, awakening our caring about the world and our own self-expression and self-awareness, and that's what our practice is about. And Zazen does that too. You want to add one?
Oh, excellent.
Yes.
I didn't realize. That's great.
So, thank you again, Paul. Thank you all very much. Before we...